Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today we are broadcasting live from the Eastham Public Library. Coming up, we'll touch on some town history and preview the last in the library's winter concert series, but first more about the library. Joining me is Eastham Public Library Director Melanie McKenzie. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Mindy. Thank you for having me.
So this is a gorgeous library, very large library for such a small town. It's like you have a treasure here. Tell us a little bit about the library.
Sure. We are absolutely so incredibly proud of our beautiful town library. It's really something that the town really has always valued. The original library was built in 1897 and has been expanded a couple of times, with the final expansion being completed in 2016. It's just really a community treasure.
Yeah, I was going to say, 17,000 square foot expansion, right? That
yes.
Opened in 2016. What is it that about this library you think it makes it so unique?
Well, when you first walk into the building, you can see it's just, you know, it's incredible. It's visually stunning. And one of the things that makes it so visually stunning, there was a big effort to kind of integrate it into the landscape. You can see there's tons of beautiful windows around. We're really kind of integrated into the hillside. There was a big effort to make sure that this building felt like it wasn't just plopped on this location, that it was, you know, kind of meant to be here. So we really, the architect made a lot of efforts to make sure that the building felt like it was integrated into the space, and it was kind of warm and welcoming as well as being a modern facility.
Yeah. Big, beautiful windows overlooking, this is Depot Pond, I guess it's got a couple of names,
mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. I love how you, it's broken up into all these great little sitting areas, and there's a corner that has a fireplace with the windows and a bird corner with mm-hmm. binoculars and mm-hmm. a little log to write down what you're seeing, jigsaw puzzles. It's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
So one of the things, though, that I know is something you're really working on and proud of is expanding the youth program. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, my youth services librarian, Fran McLaughlin, is really an excellent librarian all around, but she really has a knack for building up some really excellent youth programming. And recently she's added to our regular docket Messy Art, which we've been doing on Saturdays. It's great for all ages, but specifically like lower elementary age kids. They really get a kick out of it. And, you know, it's great because parents have this opportunity for their kids to kind of, you know, get down and dirty and making art, but they don't have to deal with all that in their own home. So that's been a lot of fun. She's also been doing a reading to dogs program, which is really, really great for building confidence in youth who might not even be able to read yet. But the act of pretending to read is really great for building their self-confidence and helping with the overall, you know, improving literacy.
Yeah. And downstairs is the children's area, which is, you've got a lot of art that the kids actually have created.
Oh yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
A lot of great, again, nice little cool spaces mm-hmm. for different activities. So also getting area students involved. You just had something, repurposed book art exhibit,
mm-hmm.
right? That was last month.
Yes.
And an April highlight, you've got the seventh grade science projects
mm-hmm.
On the risks associated with algal blooms in local ponds. So local science with the seventh graders.
Yep.
And then May, you've got the ninth grade English class in Changing the World One Poem at a Time. And they're writing their own poems?
Yeah, they are. So we have a lot of really great collaborations that we've been doing with the local middle school and high school. As you mentioned, the repurposed book art is something that we've been doing every year. Marianne Sinopoli has been coordinating that. And that's an effort really with elementary school, middle school, and high school. The art teachers help the students work to create projects that we then display for the month of February. We're also doing a new collaboration with the seventh grade science class to highlight a few of their really stellar public service announcement projects mm-hmm. on the risks involved with algae blooms.
It's very clever because I know a lot of libraries struggle to, you know, once they kind of get to past middle school, to keep kids engaged in
yes.
the library. The younger kids, it's not so hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But keeping them engaged as they get into sort of the high school ages can be tough.
Yeah.
And this is a great way to keep them engaged into what's happening in their local library.
Mm-hmm.
So a check on your website shows a variety of program offerings. And I was really impressed with the amount of trivia nights.
Mm-hmm.
You have the winter concert series, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the hour. Seed planting for kids,
mm-hmm.
the adult seed swap, movie matinees, in many ways, this is much more than a library. It's really a community center, right?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. We really, you know, try and serve people, you know, in all chapters of their life. That's our mission statement. And we really try and provide community programs that offers, you know, something for everybody, from the education component to the entertainment that people need, especially in these quieter winter months when people are really looking for something to do.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's very, very quiet, as we know, on the Outer Cape.
Yes.
In the winter. Do you get input from the community? How do you determine these various programs that you're going to be offering? And I imagine it changes as the year progresses, right?
It does. It definitely changes. We've been working to have some regular series that we know work. You know, the music series is something we've been doing for a couple of years. It's been very successful, and we've been able to offer a lot of really varied music genres and different performers. The trivia and the open mic nights, those have become kind of seasonal staples as well. And Fran has a lot of regular programming that she'll bring back in the summer. But we're always experimenting with new programs. We definitely get input from the community and a lot of folks who might be traveling around doing programs at other Cape libraries. Maybe they are looking to see if we might be willing to host them here as well. So we're always looking to see what might be new and exciting, in addition to continuing to offer stuff that we know the community loves.
And I was so curious. I was thinking, all right, movie matinees and the concert series. I'm like, where on earth would you put that? But you have a wonderful room that looks like acoustically would be great for music, but also you've got that great screen you can mm-hmm. pull down. That is really a multi-purpose room.
Yes, it's absolutely a multi-purpose room. We have concerts, we have movie showings, we have actually had animal programs in that room. We host the amazing Animal Ambassadors with live animals. So yeah, that room can kind of do it all.
And then I want you to talk a little bit more about the seed planting for kids. Do they actually plant things here at the library, or is it something they do at home?
Yeah, so they have their little seedlings that Fran kind of helps them set up, and she helps kind of take care of them initially. And then some of those things do end up in our pollinator playground at the back of the library. But she also gives them the opportunity to take them home as well, if that's something that they're able to yeah. do.
It's such a lovely piece of land here with the pond. Do you do many outdoor programs when the weather is nice?
We do, and we're trying to do more. Fran loves to do her regular story time outside when the weather is nice, and that's just really wonderful for kids. We also have hosted a couple of smaller musical events outside, and we had the Red Hawk Singers and Dancers outside, as well as a drumming program that we've hosted outside as well.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about the room in the front. It's not the actual original building, right? But what do you use that for?
Yeah, that's kind of the footprint of what we call the VIS room, so the Village Improvement Society. They actually created the original library building on this plot of land. It wasn't initially owned by the town. It was put up by this group, the Village Improvement Society. And so when this new building was created, we wanted to kind of give a nod to the history of that. So that room at the front of the building is the VIS room, and it is now the book sale room for the Friends of the Library.
Yeah. All right. So there's this little thing here in Eastham called the Turnip Festival.
Yes.
That happens every year. The famous Eastham Turnip. So that's the Saturday before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and a lot of that activity happens here, right?
Yes, we've actually brought it back here entirely. It was at one point in time at the Chapel in the Pines next door, and it very quickly outgrew that. Then it moved to the Elks Lodge in Eastham, and it outgrew that as well. Before COVID, we were having it at the high school, and it was really filling up every available space that the high school had to offer, from the gym to the cafeteria to the auditorium, for some of the programs that we were offering as well. As with a lot of things, you know, COVID kind of forced us to shrink things back down. But we've been hosting it at the library the past couple of years, now that we have kind of this bigger space. And we've also been collaborating with the Chapel in the Pines to be kind of an additional space for us during that time. And we've been able to do so much here, between offering programs to highlighting the different services that the library has to offer. And Marianne Sinopoli has been kind of spearheading that for past 7 years, has been working to collaborate with other organizations in town, including the Historical Society, to offer expanded programming related to town history and turnips.
Yeah. You know, as we started this series visiting libraries across the Cape and Islands, I wondered how often you get people visiting from other towns. Obviously, you've got a lot of people here from the Outer Cape, but do you find that people come are curious? Because I'm excited about visiting all these different libraries. They're so different, and you all have so many different, you know, unique programs. Do you get visitors from other towns on the Cape?
We absolutely do, especially because we're, you know, really easily accessible right off the highway. So it's very easy for folks to come either on their way to or, you know, away from P-Town. So we definitely get a lot of visitors from other towns, just poking in and seeing what we have to offer.
Yeah, and we're going to put a link on our website to your website, capeandislands.org, so people can see all these great programs that you're offering. Melanie McKenzie is the East Ham Public Library Director. Thanks, and thanks for having us today. Such a beautiful spot. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
We are live at the East Ham Public Library this morning, and coming up, we'll have a little bit of history. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. We are live this morning at the East Ham Public Library. Joining us now is Marka Ann Daly. She's the archivist at the East Ham Historical Society and curator at the Schoolhouse Museum and co-curator at the Swift Daly House and Museum. Hi, Marka.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, so we mentioned the annual Turnip Festival. How did the East Ham turnip become so famous? Because obviously other people grow turnips.
They do, but East Ham developed its own strain of the white with the little bit of a purple top to it. And originally was East Ham was originally known for the asparagus crops, but there was a rust fungus in the early 20s, and so turnips kind of used the same fields. And then asparagus came back again. They developed some kind of strain that would be fine, and so they use the same fields, but the asparagus is planted in the spring and harvested in the summer. Turnips are harvested after the asparagus, and I mean planted and then harvested in November. So in the early 20s, 24 I think, they had really good crops, but it was very difficult for the farmers to get them to market, and market meant Boston. So they formed a cooperative, which was not very popular. At the end of this great meeting at the town hall, only about 12 of the farmers, 30-something at the meeting, joined. But that cooperative allowed them to use the railroads to get their turnips up to Boston. There was the Nauset brand of asparagus, turnips, cranberries, and carrots. A huge banner hung from Faneuil Hall up in Boston. And they did so well that the next year, many more of the farmers joined because it was much more profitable.
Yeah. All right, so in addition to the East Ham Historical Society, there are the four museums plus archives. So tell us a little bit, give us a little bit of synopsis of some of these, like the Schoolhouse Museum and the Swift Daly House Museum, which was your grandmother's?
Yes.
So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Swift Daly House is so named because my grandparents would come down to the Cape from Mendon in the early 30s, and they built a cottage down at Cooksbrook Beach and lived there. But my grandmother always wanted a project to restore an old house. And they found this old house, totally run down. It had been vacant for almost 20 years. And they bought it, and it was right on the highway. Well, it wasn't a highway then. But they restored it. And at one point, she had a little gift shop, and she had a home bakery for 10 years. But they took, my father and my aunt were in high school, and they would take blow torches, and they went through about 11 different layers of paint and wallpaper.
Wow.
To get to the original. And they found the 6 over 9 window frames up in the attic. And so it is as it was in 1741.
Wow.
And when my grandfather died, my grandmother asked my father and aunt if either of them wanted the house for in her, you know. They said hell no. It was too cold in the winter. There's no insulation, you know. Yeah. So she gave it to the Historical Society on the condition she could live there for the rest of her life. And then she started giving tours and opened it up as a museum.
Yeah. She was very proud of it, obviously.
She was very proud of it. And she went out of her way to convince townspeople to donate things to it.
Oh, wow.
So it's furnished in mostly 18th century, 1700s in the keeping room. The front parlor is actually Victorian from different things from different people.
Wow.
So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it includes this Randlett Tool Museum, which is a hands-on for children and parents, all East Ham's agricultural history in a nutshell in that museum. It's just fabulous.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep up with here, though, to know.
It is.
So what kinds of archive requests do you get?
Many. Lots of genealogy, my ancestors, you know, and can you find out? People want to know where they lived or what they did. But then we get really interesting ones. Some come from newspaper reporters who are doing stories, interesting stories for the Cape, especially Provincetown Independent or the Cape Cod Times. Yeah. And so the turnips always come up in November. Someone wants to do a story on them.
Yeah. Do you get people who buy a house, old house here, and want to know the history?
Yes.
I would think that would be pretty popular.
It is. And the East Ham room at the library used to be the Historical Society's archives room before we moved to the Schoolhouse Museum, which I didn't mention.
Go ahead, tell us about that. Yeah.
Built in 1869. East Ham had six different schools. It was a large town. Mm. And it was a one-room schoolhouse, but they moved the South Precinct School, which was identical in form and size, to be a second wing. And then they moved the North Precinct School. So one came from Orleans and one came from Billingsgate, Wellfleet. Mm-hmm. And it became a three-wing schoolhouse, which my mom went to and most of my aunts and uncles in town. And it was a fabulous school. Mm. And now that's our museum and archives.
Right. All right, so let's talk about some of the fun things you have in the archives. Tell us a little bit more about the moon cussers.
Well, moon cussers, actually, when we started looking, it was for a graduate student at Boston College who was doing some kind of dissertation on the lighthouses. And she had the original lighthouses, 1838, the Three Sisters, as they came to be known. But she had heard that there was some opposition to that. So we went into the archives, and lo and behold, we found in the oral histories folks whose parents, grandparents had been lighthouse keepers. We came to the library and went to the Cape Cod section to find whatever the library had on the Three Sisters and possible opposition. And the wreckers were against it because they said it would ruin their livelihood. Because the wreckers, there were three kinds of wreckers. The moon cussers, who were the ones who supposedly waved their lanterns so that ships at sea would think there was a safe harbor and come in and be wrecked. Then they were not on Cape Cod, I've seen in several sources that I use. And then the wreckers were those who, when they heard about a wreck, they would go down and actively try to save the crew. Mm-hmm. But then they would take what they could, salvage,
right,
as they called it. And then there were the beachcombers who just kind of come along what they did.
Yeah. And they're like, yep, no, we don't want those lighthouses because right. we want to be able to.
Right.
To,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Something people may not know is that Eastham was the last dry town on the Cape.
Yes.
Not until the 1960s did they sell
Early
liquor.
60s. Yeah. yeah. We had a request for an old house. Someone was taking an old Eastham house, which is now commercial establishment, and looking for the history of it. This happened to be the Lobster Shanty now, which used to be the Hillside Grill when I was growing up. And in order to find information, we went to our oral histories, which we have the tape scripts for, to find information. We went to the Eastham Vacationers Handbook to look at the ads and realized that Eastham didn't have any liquor stores. The ads in the Vacationers Handbook were only for Orleans. So we thought, well, how did the Hillside, which had a reputation as being a real local watering hole, when did they get their liquor license? Because they didn't have it in the 30s. Prohibition ended in 33. Eastham didn't get liquor stores until 61. And beer and wine didn't show up on the menus of any of the Eastham restaurants until a couple years after that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Tell us a little the story of Jeremiah's Gutter.
Jeremiah Smith owned an awful lot of land, and all the land by Boat Meadow. And the meadows and the marshes on the bayside were very valuable properties because that's what they used to feed their cattle and horses and everything, the marshes. Well, their Boat Meadow had a river creek. It was called Jeremiah's Creek because it was on his property, which went almost as far as what the current Rotary up in Southeastham. And before it became known as Jeremiah's Gutter, there was a huge storm in 1717. And that storm was a nor'wester. And it broke through from the end of the creek all the way to Town Cove.
Wow.
And Cyprian Southwick was a captain of a whale ship anchored off Billingsgate. And he sailed through that opening. He was sent through that opening that the storm created because it was the storm that had wrecked the Widda pirate ship down off the coast of Wellfleet, Eastham. And so he sailed through hoping to get to the Widda before the wreckers.
Oh.
He didn't. Yeah. They got there before him. But it was ostensibly a canal.
Yeah.
Well, they closed it in because they realized if it remained a canal and another storm came, the lower part of the Cape, which was really agriculturally important to the colony, would be cut off.
Wow.
So then in the early 1800s, a couple of Eastham men said, let's build that canal. And so that's when it was Jeremiah's Gutter, and they wanted to build it. It was only about 16 rods that they had to go through to get to Town Cove.
Wow. You mentioned a little while ago about the oral history project.
Yes.
So tell us a little about the oral history. Is that still ongoing?
Well, it's been revitalized, yes. In the late 70s, I think the first person interviewed was the town miller of the windmill. And Eastham's mission is to preserving Eastham's past for Eastham's future. And so members of the Historical Society went to anyone who had lived in Eastham for a long time and were older and interviewed them. And we have about 100 tape scripts and the tapes, the audio recordings of these interviews. So I became really interested, and I realized they petered out in the early 2000s. And so now I take my video recorder And I just set it up in a corner of a room, and I visit people in Eastham mm-hmm. who are older or who have some history of Eastham and would be interesting to talk to. Yeah. And
there you go.
And there we go.
Let's talk about some of the historical sites you have here. You have two older cemeteries, right?
Yes, Cove Burying Ground, which is the oldest on Cape Cod, and Bridge Road Cemetery. Each one of them was built around a meeting house. So there are three Mayflower passengers who are buried in the Cove Burying Ground.
Oh.
And we get a lot of requests in the archives for information on them, Constance Hopkins, Giles Hopkins, and Lieutenant Joseph Rogers.
Right. Of course, we hear a lot about First Encounter Beach.
Yes. Their first encounter, according to the old stone plaque, with, as kids, we memorized it, on this site in 1644, Miles Standish would have had their first encounter with hostile Indians, you know. Mm. That plaque has been stolen, removed a couple of years ago. But there's a newer one in the parking lot, which is much more politically correct. And it's from another perspective, that of the American First Peoples who were here, the Nausets, mm-hmm. when the pilgrims came. They were looking for safe harbor, sailing in the shallop from Provincetown mm-hmm. to find it.
When I think of Eastham, one of the most beautiful spots I think here is Fort Hill, of course, that just amazing view. And I think a lot of people don't realize that was nearly developed. I mean, they had stakes in the ground.
They did. And recently, last winter, I spent a week in Boston going to all the historical sites there. And I went to the JFK Library. And there, it was an afterthought. It was someone from that, because of the connection to Cape Cod, and it was the national park that was going in, and there was lots of opposition to it in town. But Fort Hill was added in at the very last minute when they signed that park. Mm. And thank goodness, because
yes.
it's the trails are fabulous, and down to Hemingway and the view of Coast Guard. And
just such a beautiful spot, even if you just sit there in your car.
Right, yes.
And then there's also the Peniman House.
Peniman House, mm-hmm. that was Edward Peniman. He was a ship captain. His wife and a couple of his children used to sail with him. He was a whaler, but he also went all over the world, Hawaii and... Mm-hmm. There was a princess in Hawaii that we gave him many, many artifacts, and we had an exhibit of his at the Schoolhouse Museum.
Yeah,
he's supposed to have had the first indoor toilet in Eastham in the Peniman House.
Another little tidbit people don't know, right?
Well, one of my grandmothers would dispute that. She said her house, which is now it used to be the Overlook Inn, and now it's the Inn at the Oaks. She said that was the first one, so who knows?
So there are so many, there's a lot of opportunities for people to explore history here in Eastham. You also have two big fundraisers that you do annually. One is the Plant, Tool, and White Elephant Sale. That's coming up in June. Tell
yes.
us about that. What is that?
That's on the grounds of the Swift Daily Complex, so the Tool Museum puts up old tools or invites old...
People love old tools.
Oh, they do. And they bring them, and they have a huge What's It table of tool that they don't know what it is.
I love that.
And so... People come and they have a little contest of what is it? What was it used for?
Oh, wow.
It's fabulous.
Oh, I bet you have some great photos of things on that table.
Well, members of the society grow plants, and especially a few, and separate them in the springtime as you do, and save them and put them in pots. And then four or five local nurseries donate plants. Mm-hmm. And then the White Elephant is anyone with anything in their attic, and then vendors come. Mm-hmm. So that's the 2nd of June this year, with a rain date of the next. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like fun. And then you also have the antique show in July.
The antique show, I believe this is our 48th year. That will be July 27th on the grounds of the Schoolhouse Museum. And antique vendors come, and it's an all-day affair. Mm. And those are our two big fundraisers because we're a nonprofit, yeah. And, you know, our dues for membership through the year does a little bit, but these things really help out.
So as a historian here and learning so much over the years about it, have there been things that have surprised you? I mean, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Like the first toilet, maybe?
Well, the dry town. I mean, I knew growing up that people went to Orleans, you know, to the liquor stores, but I hadn't realized the history of it. Yeah. And electricity coming to East Ham.
Oh, tell us that.
Provincetown got electricity before East Ham did, because they needed it more because of the harbor and for the fishing and for the refrigeration. And it worked its way up here. We didn't get electricity until the town hall was wired, I think, in the late 20s. But some parts of East Ham, like the old main road, West Main to Wellfleet, which is now Massasoit, it was the mid-30s before they had electricity.
Oh, isn't that interesting? All right, so you mentioned earlier that you one of the things you like about this library is the Cape Cod section, which is we're sitting right next to it. So what kinds of goodies can you find there?
Anything at all that has to do with history of East Ham. And small pamphlet books, not just the well-known Henry Kittredges and, you know, the Don Wildings but sections on shipwrecks and, you know, you name it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Melanie, I'm going to bring you back in the conversation. There's some really cool, we were looking at Old Cape Cod, the carefree 50s and 60s. And literally it's just all newspaper clippings from that time.
Yeah.
How did you come to acquire all of this? And are you still looking for some of these older books?
We've come to it in a lot of different ways. You know, over time, you know, we get donations of some of the more rare publications or things that weren't as mainstream. And we're definitely still interested in acquiring some of those because these books are really well used. You know, these smaller publications on East Ham history are not as well known, but definitely some of, you know, the most authoritative sources on the smaller pockets of history. So we do get donations in for, you know, additional copies of those, and we hold on to them because as the collection gets used, we want to replace them.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Shipwrecks around Cape Cod and building province. I'm just like a really unique collection here.
Yeah.
And then you also do have a room where you have some of the older books that probably, what are those, like people looking for genealogy information?
Yeah, we
have
family histories down there as well. And a lot of those books are digitized and available online, but it's nice for people to get to look through the, you know, the physical materials too. So some of the more popular family histories, we have publications on that. We have a few, you know, publications on the Hopkins family history, for instance. And so, yeah, when people come in and make requests, we'll pull the things out and bring upstairs and let them take a look.
Yeah, great. Anything else you want to add about the library that people should know?
The library is so well loved by its community, and I think we're going to be really successful for a long, long time, providing great programs that people enjoy.
Oh, so for sure. Marga Ann Daly is the archivist at the East Ham Historical Society. She's also the curator at the Schoolhouse Museum and co-curator at the Swift Daly House Museum, which all sound very interesting. I'm going to have to come visit because they all sound so interesting to see. And coming up after a break, we're going to preview the last concert in the Winter Concert Series. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. We are live at the East Ham Public Library this morning. The Winter Concert Series wraps up with pianist Jim Brusso and vocalist Mike Sullivan on March 30th. I talked to Jim on Tuesday, and here's our conversation. Jim, welcome.
And thank you, Mindy.
For the Winter Concert Series, the library invited back musicians who've played here in the past and left the audience wanting more. So tell us a little about that experience.
I sure will. It's such a pleasure to work in that beautiful space. That library, as many people know, just meld so beautifully with nature. I urge people driving along Route 6, I say, pull off if you haven't seen that library. Go in, just walk around. And that room is terrific. The wonderful Steinway piano. You get one of the most attentive audiences you're going to find anywhere. And for a musician or singer, that's such a rewarding and a more and more rare experience.
And aside from the library, you play a number of local venues. And this time you're teaming up with vocalist Mike Sullivan. Do you often team up with area musicians wherever you're playing?
Pretty much so. I regularly play at a club called Tin Pan Alley in Provincetown. And for 10 years now, Monday nights have been about Jim and friends. And the friends involve a core group of singers.
I say, I know you often perform as you meant pop, jazz, and American songbook tunes. Do you have a favorite genre, or is it the variety that appeals to you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mindy. And I think I would have to say it's more about the style. So you could take a jazz tune and do it a certain way, and I get great pleasure out of that. Or you take a Gershwin that's maybe done upbeat, but you slow it down, or vice versa. And so it really depends on the song. And it depends on the musician. And what's really rewarding for me is each time I work with a new singer, that person will bring something to the table, songs that maybe I've never done before, a style, a willingness to try something new. And all of these sort of X factors come together and really give life to the process. Mm. And it's pretty exciting as a musician.
You're also a composer. So tell us more about Locked and Loaded, an American musical.
I have been deeply concerned about gun violence in our country. I'm a journalist and had written some on the topic and stayed very close to it. And in fact, worked with someone at one point who was a survivor of the Virginia Tech shootings. And so this whole issue has deeply affected me. And here's a disclaimer, I'm not anti-Second Amendment by any means, but I just think the country can do a much, much better job of protecting us from gun violence. And so I thought, how can I effectively address this topic? And it came to me, okay, you're a musician, you're a writer. And so I brought these two things together and fashioned this musical. And obviously it's a very heavy subject. So I've built it around a love story to make it more palatable. And it doesn't preach. It has a decided point of view, of course, but I wanted to tell the story. I wanted to give audiences a chance to think about this issue, maybe think about it in different ways. And every viewpoint on the gun spectrum is represented in this piece. And it's been through a lot. We did it in Provincetown. We did it in New York. It's been through several rewrites. I've worked mm-hmm. with a couple dramaturgs, and there are a couple songs from the show. We'll be doing at least one of the songs in the East Ham show that Mike will be singing.
And we're going to hear a tune from the CD, which came out in September. This is In Love With You. What do you want to tell us about it?
Falling in Love With You comes at a point when a woman who has grown up all around guns finds herself falling in love with a man who's a gun reform activist. So it's a highly unexpected love story.
Is it safe to go out after dark? Is this more than a summertime lark? Have I found the true meaning of joy in falling, falling, falling in love with you? If this is love, then I'd love to know, 'cause it's magic and it's moving and it's more than a dream come true. He touched me deep inside, but I'm terrified of the things that love can do. Can I trust that I'm not?
Did I read that you don't read music?
No, I never studied it.
So you play by ear then?
I play by ear, but I've been playing for many, many decades. And, you know, there are certain limitations, of course, to that. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, when I work with a new singer, you know, they may say, can you play this in E? And I'll say, well, no, but can we do it in D? Or can you do this in B minor? And I'll say, well, no, but A minor will work. And I don't think there's ever been a moment when we weren't able to do a song because I couldn't find somebody's key.
So how do you compose then? You hear it in your head, and then how do you transpose that to the singer? Do you just play the tune? And I mean, how does the composition work?
Well, that's a good point, Mindy. And people, you know, wonder about that. Well, does the music come first? Does the song come first? And there really, for me, is no pattern. It just sometimes, yes, I'll have a melody kicking around in my head. Sometimes I'll simply sit down at the piano and start plunking it out, you know. Or I'll have, in the case of the musical, it'll be, okay, now we need to say something at this moment. Sometimes the songs in a musical will be sort of an exclamation point for a moment. Sometimes their functionality will be more to move the plot along. Mm-hmm. And some will say, well, that's the sole reason for music in a musical. And my counter to that, Mindy, is always, I can't write somebody else's musical. I can only write my own.
Yeah, so anyway. So what do you have planned for the March 30th concert?
Well, we have some really neat stuff. There will be everything from things like the Beatles, Elton John, but then we'll go to, you know, the classic American songbook. There'll be Gershwin and Cole Porter. There will be, of course, something from the musical. And one other thing I wanted to mention is that Mike is a very skilled and very talented mask maker. And so we plan to bring along to show the audience just how exquisite these masks are. They're in a gallery in New Orleans and here on the Cape. And just perhaps there'll be a song done in a mask.
we're gonna go out on another tune from Locked and Loaded, an American musical, which is My Heart is Full. Beautiful song. You want to say anything about it?
While Falling in Love with You is a very traditional love song, My Heart is Full, as they say, it's kind of a dystopian one, and a song in some ways for our times. I think a lot of people are feeling kind of unmoored right now, and love becomes the one thing that they can cling to, the love of a partner, a parent, a child, a sibling. That is sort of the motivation.
Pianist Jim Brasso and vocalist Mike Sullivan in concert at Eastham Public Library, March 30th at 1 p.m. Jim, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Mindy.
Thanks to Melanie McKenzie and her staff at Eastham Public Library for hosting us, and to Marka Ann Daly, Eastham historian. We'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
If this should be our last embrace, my heart is full. I ask you memorize my face. You have my soul. With time unsure to stand between this evening and the great unseen. No promise of more April's green. My heart is full. We took for granted every hour, but now we know the fleeting ways of money, power, how fast they go. With only moments left to spare, I might condemn a life unfair, or lose myself within your hair. My heart is full. My heart, a fragile thing. For you alone does my heart sing. Forgive this song, its trembling tone. What matters now is you alone. So hold my gaze and I'll keep yours. What's done is done. The hour has passed for settling scores. Who's lost? Who's won? And if we're given one more chance to take tomorrow out to dance, for you I'll reinvent romance. My heart is full. My heart, a fragile thing. For you alone does my heart sing. And if the fates run off with spring, my heart.